Hey, Carol, how do you say the botanical name for marigolds?
I say it, the botanical name for marigolds.
That's funny. I was thinking of Tegedies because I was listening to the Grow, Cook, Eat, Arrange podcast that's done by Sarah Raven with some of her friends. And Arthur Parkinson was on there. And, you know, he's kind of the guru of containers and chickens, as is she. And he kept saying this word. And I couldn't for the life of me figure out what he was saying.
What was he saying?
Well, I mean, I don't know how he was saying Tegedies, but he wasn't saying it like that because he has a different accent than we have here. And he has a different accent from Sarah. So it just was confusing. Finally, I figured it out and I just had to laugh.
Well, for us, we can just say marigolds and move on to this week's episode.
That's right, because we're going to talk more about Sarah. I feel like we can call her Sarah later in the podcast. Welcome to the Garden Angelus, where we talk about flowers, veggies, and all the best dirt. I'm Dee Nash from Guthrie, Oklahoma, where I garden an acre and a half out of 7.5 acres in the country.
And I'm Carol Michael from Indianapolis, Indiana. I have a suburban garden measured in square feet. It's about a third of an acre.
We call ourselves Garden Angelus because we are evangelists for gardening. We love gardening and we want you to love it too.
Yes, we do. And we aren't afraid to spill the beans and tell all of our gardening secrets, the good, the bad, and even the ugly. But that's enough of who, what, when, where. Let's move on to this week's episode. Hello, Dee.
Good morning, Carol. We're recording this in the morning on a Friday. It is quite chilly in my world. How is it at your house?
Well, it is also quite chilly after quite the warm up earlier in the week. And I went by the greenhouse on Tuesday. And she said they could not keep people from buying the frost tender stuff. And they have signs, you know, like,
please don't buy these.
That this stuff isn't frost tender and, you know, you're not bringing it back. And then she said, some people were like, well, can I buy it all and pay you and then you can hold it? And she's like, no, I don't have space to put everybody's stuff in little compartments and say, this is this person, this is that person. She's full of stuff to buy. So that was kind of crazy. And I couldn't even hold my own sister back. My youngest sister, she's texting me. I'm going to, can we go to the greenhouse? I'll only buy stuff I can take in if it gets too cold. I'm like, okay. So we went, she bought some hanging baskets.
It is really hard to not buy early because they tempt us so much, you know? And I planted mine like a week or so ago after looking at the forecast because we're about at the freeze ending. Well, it got down to 44 today, and 44 is close for tropicals.
That is.
It might burn some of those some of those coleus. It might burn them. It would burn cosmos too.
I looked at the forecast and it's going to be in the high 30s at night. The high of Sunday is only going to be 54. Nobody likes that. If you're an annual or a tropical or a tomato or a pepper, that is too cold.
That is way too cold. So
in the meantime, I've mowed twice. And then I weeded maybe half to a third of what I would need to weed. I just keep plugging along. And inside, I sowed seeds for the zinnia angustifolia, the little marigolds that I like, four kinds of basil, plus seeds from National Garden Bureau that they sent us to try, two celosias, some impatiens, some of that sun coral candy coleus again. So that's all going.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you've got a lot going on.
We can talk in the what I'm doing this week about what I didn't get done. So what do you got going? Nothing?
Yeah. So funny. So I've been so busy. We are in go time, as you like to say. And I trimmed up the lavender, and I still need to trim up the boxwoods. I had hoped to get it done, but I didn't get it done. And then I planted out some more seeds because, you know, you can still start seeds even this late for
things. Oh, sure.
If you've got someone to water them for you in June, they might make it. I might get them all planted, but I've got to be somewhere at the end of May. Anyway, and then I planted out more seeds outside. I thinned seedlings. I planted out transplants, and I'll have to see how that basil fared because it was kind of chilly this morning. And then I received some more plants in the mail, and I planted out most of them, but I held a few back because I was a little worried about planting them out. And then I met with two different garden coaching clients, wrote a long post about container plants for Garden Bloggers Bloom Day, which is the longest running meme in garden world, which
it
is
sure is.
I don't make it every month, but I try. And then I went to a pop-up sale yesterday at Blooming Vintage Oklahoma, and she's on Instagram. And I bought two bird baths, a plant stand, a jardiniere, and two brownware bowls for my kitchen display shelf, and a railroad watering can. I love Ruth's sales. They're the best.
What in the world is a jardiniere?
A jardiniere is a container that fits up on, I mean, for lack of a better word, this one is ironwork and is really beautiful, but it's normally an elevated planter that is fancy. And the French call it a jardiniere because it is meant to be kept in the jardin, which is garden. Ooh. So it's a garden pot. But this one's an outside one that you put something in. And I asked Ruth about it, and I said, what would you put in this? Because Ruth has a really good eye. She has a better eye than I do. And she said, you know, I was just going to put a terracotta pot in it. I said, sounds good to me. So I've got lots of terracotta pots.
There you go. Sounds nice. We'll have to get a picture when you get it all planted up.
Yeah, later. So let's play favorites. You tell me your favorite, and then I'll tell you mine.
So while I was out there weeding, guess what I found second time in my life in my own garden? I found a morel mushroom.
Yeah.
It was really big, and I left it there just like I did before because I want those spores to spread around, and maybe someday there'll be enough to pick. And I went out there this morning because I wanted to take a picture of my Cherokee Princess Dogwood in full bloom, and it's starting to shrivel up and everything, but I'm just like, morels in my backyard. And I probably brought in spores, I believe in 2011,
okay,
because my brother and his now ex-wife owned a property out a ways, a wooded property. They were going to dam up a section to put a lake. So I drove through that section and pulled up a bunch of wildflowers and put them in my garden. I probably picked up some morel mushroom spores and all that. And because I'm very untidy with the leaves and stuff, they're you know, it's becoming a kind of a habitat for them. So very exciting. What's your favorite?
You know, people in Oklahoma have just been morel crazy for about a month. And I think they're basically done because we've had 90 degree temperatures and that kind of ends morel season. My favorite this week is a pass along rose that I have in my garden from my neighbor who lives across the street. Her name is Debbie Smith. And we've been neighbors. Well, Bill's been neighbors with she and her husband, who's now deceased, for 45 years.
Wow.
They were the second family that came out here back then. I've been neighbors with her for 35, and she gave me this rose probably 20, 25 years ago. And I call it Pink Hat Lady because it doesn't have a name. And it reminds me of ladies in church with big pink hats because it blooms for about 3 weeks and then it's done. But it's extremely fragrant, sits at the end of the garden where it, you know, just does its own thing, never gets black spot, doesn't have any trouble at all. So it's got some beautiful flowers.
That is cool. You know, if you ought to try to figure out what it really is.
I have tried. I can't. There's too many pink roses.
Yeah, that's true.
Too many. It's like daylilies.
Yeah.
So why don't you do the next quote?
I will. The garden year has no beginning and no end. And that is by Elizabeth Lawrence, famous Southern garden writer. We know who she is. We don't have to look her up.
Yeah. Very famous. Wrote for the Charlotte Observer.
Yes. We'll talk about that a little bit later.
Wrote a lot of different things. Wrote a lot of books, which you and I have read cover to cover. So our flower topic you came up with, and I'm going to let you start it off.
Well, before we get going on it, my older sister texted me yesterday, and she said, do you deadhead all your daffodils and tulips and other bulbs? Actually, she said, do you deadhead your grape hyacinths? And I wrote back and I said, I do not. And they do self-sow and spread around a little bit. And she was very relieved.
You want them to, right?
Yes.
Can you imagine trying to go around and deadhead hyacinths or Scilla siberica or Conodoxa or any of those? No.
I deadhead the big daffodils, hybrid tulips. I have some Spanish bluebells, which are terribly aggressive. I make sure to deadhead those really well. But everything else, I'm just like, I'm happy to have you go ahead and do your thing and spread about the garden a bit. So anyway, I just wanted to say that if people are saying, should I deadhead it or not? It's really gardener's choice.
Yeah, it's gardener's choice. Some years I deadhead more than others. I usually pull up my tulips instead of deadheading. Sometimes I'll miss one and it might bloom one more year, but it'll be much smaller and look different than it did the first year. But that's fine. This garden, while it's precious to me, is not a quote unquote precious garden. And so stuff comes and stuff goes. And the daffodils, I haven't, most of the hybrids, the really newer hybrids, don't seem to go to seed, which might be why you would want to deadhead them, because you don't want them putting their effort into the seed. You want them to put the effort back into the bulb. I'd want to say one thing, though, because this comes up a lot in garden coaching. It takes a long time to establish bulbs in your garden and to get that naturalized look.
It does.
I have a lot of clients who started out new, and one of them wrote me this week and she said, I planted thalia, but it didn't look like much. And the bulbs were small. The flowers were small. And I was like, I giggled to myself because I thought, well, that's what thalia is supposed to do. But obviously you had a different idea about that. And I wrote her back and I said, so thalia is supposed to be small. But on top of that, it takes years and years to get bulbs established. And you need to add some more every year. That's the first thing. What was my second thing? Oh, don't cut back the leaves. If you cut back the leaves, you'll have fewer daffodils next year.
Right. So,
and I do pull most of my tulips. I get asked that every year. That's why I have a really good friend up in Tulsa, and she plants the most beautiful tulip extravaganza every year. She outdoes Linda Vauter, which is saying something. And the effort she has to go to do those tulips is she puts them all in wire baskets to stop the voles and the gophers.
I ain't doing that.
She's totally dedicated to this. Her name is Teresa Vaughn Dawkins. And she's on Instagram as Oak Grove Gardens. Okay, so the point of that is she pulls all those and she just did it. In fact, she did a whole video on it this week.
You know,
and she and I have been chatting back and forth about it. I'm not willing to put in that much effort on tulips to pull them up. So I do about, what did I say last time? 25, 50. That's it. And I know that sounds like a lot, but it's really not.
I do out here by my new mailbox planting. I pulled the tulips last year and I'll pull the tulips this year because I want to fill it up with the smaller zinnias and stuff, and they just kind of get in the way and I know they're not going to come back as good. And I also, on those that I know I just need like 1 year display, I actually buy just cheap bulbs at the hardware store, 100 of them for like $13 or something.
That's really smart, actually. I have to let the cat back out.
All right. Well, you talk about that. I will say that I've got these great big, I think they call them peony flowering tulips, where they just petals everywhere.
The late doubles.
And those have been growing in my one garden and they have come back reliably for years, and I will deadhead those. In fact, I was weeding and I inadvertently snapped one off and I set it in a little bowl of water and it was very pretty for a few days.
Yeah. I will say certain varieties of tulips do seem to come back better, but I'm not going to get into which ones, because sure as I say, a particular one does, it won't for somebody.
It's true. And that really isn't our flower topic. I just wanted to point that out because if my sister's texting me and asking me, I would bet that other people, have the same question. So our topic this week is I saw this book and requested review copies for us. It's called Floral Folklore, The Forgotten Tales Behind Nature's Most Enchanting Plants by Allison Davies, illustrated by Sarah Wildling. And I think this is a very pretty book. And I've read
a beautiful book.
Yeah, I'll call it a grazing book, so to speak. You're not going to sit down and read it cover to cover, but you're going to sit down and look at a flower you're interested in. Like in your case, it would be geraniums. My case, of course, violets. And then for each flower, she has written down a little tiny one sentence about what is that flower, what the meaning of the flower is. And we've talked about flower language and how the Victorians used to send different kinds of flowers to send messages. And then she tells a folklore story about them, and she tells you where it originated from. And so, like for violets, the story originated from Greece and was about the Greek goddess Venus. And it was a story I had never heard before. And so I think this is one of those lovely books that is nice to have sitting on the nightstand, or if you have a guest room and maybe somebody's coming over to spend the weekend or something, you could put it by the nightstand for them, or you could tuck it into a basket for Mother's Day. The illustrations are very pretty. I love the illustrations in it.
The one for sunflowers is gorgeous.
Oh, yeah.
Helianthus annus, which means annual.
Exactly.
I've kind of been teaching my garden coaching clients a little bit of the Latin or variety names when I coach them, because like the word aria always means lime green foliage.
Yeah.
You know, floriplano. What does floriplano always mean?
Double flowering.
And so I tell them, if you want to know what something is, sometimes you can tell. I know this one. This is on page 72, and it's Gallium Verum, and it's called Lady's Bedstraw. And actually, I have talked about it.
We talked about it on the podcast.
Yeah, we've talked about it on the podcast, and I've talked about it in my talk on Marian Gardens for the Blessed Mother, because Lady's Bedstraw is for Mary. But the story that she gives with it is from Scandinavia, and it's based on the god Odin. So that's interesting.
It is.
Iris is about the magic of the rainbow. That totally makes sense.
Now, at the very beginning, she'll say that one of the things that the stories are intended to be is to kind of get you away from screens and help you think about life outside of on the internet, which sometimes I think there's quite the blurring sometimes between real life and the fake internet life. And so for every single flower, she's got she calls it a ritual. And so for like sunflower, it's a ritual to boost creativity and joyful energy. And these rituals may not be for everybody. They may be a little woo-woo for some people, but some of them, they're quite nice. And the whole point of it is slow down and think about something besides what's online. Think about your flowers. And I love a good story about a flower that just makes them that much more interesting when you know there's folklore around those flowers.
Yeah.
So I'm going to keep this one on, and it is going to be one that I'm just going to dip in and out of and enjoy.
Mm-hmm. I like the ritual under parsley, which is on page 95. And basically she calls it a ritual to protect and boost your vitality. And she talks about how parsley is rich in antioxidants. And I think it's rich in vitamin C, which is an antioxidant. And so she has you make a hot tea with parsley, which would be a very easy ritual to do.
It would be.
And you could sit and sip it and look at your garden and think about what you want to do next. So I love these illustrations. The illustration for rosemary, which she used the blue, the one that flowers blue. I'd almost frame that. That's really beautiful.
It is beautiful.
This is a beautiful book. It would make a great Mother's Day gift, a great moving in gift, a great gift for people who already know how to garden but love plants.
So, and then the other thing, and you know I love this, it's divided into spring flowers, summer flowers, fall flowers, winter flowers. And so, you know, I do love a book you can read in season. And so I thought that was really nice too. Because then instead of ripping through this like it was some kind of one of those MC Beaton, Agatha Raisin mysteries that I can listen to in about about 4 hours. It's one you can savor all through the year. So that makes it very nice.
It does. We should say that we got our review copies from Leaping Hare Press, which is an imprint of Quarto.
Yeah.
And do you want to repeat it?
Yes. Floral Folklore, The Forgotten Tales Behind Nature's Most Enchanting Plants by Allison Davies. Very lovely. We are happy to have it on our shelves.
So I'm going to do the next quote. I just play. I'm playful. And I become increasingly more playful with age. And this is from How to Grow Old, like Isabella Rossellini. And I have to say, she has become really playful. And I so enjoy her Instagram. I don't follow it constantly and look at it, but she has some great stuff on there about her farm, all the animals they have, her beautiful gardens. And she's just full of joy. And I think
she is.
You know why? Because she doesn't stay on the internet all the time.
That, and you know, she basically is old enough to say, I really don't care what anybody else thinks.
No, she shows up on there without any kind of makeup on or anything else. She doesn't care. Sometimes a splash of lipstick.
Was she the face of Lancome Cosmetics?
Yes, L'Oreal and Lancome. Mm-hmm.
They let her go because she got too old.
They did. And here's the funny part. They hired her back a few years ago.
Yes.
And she has a whole thing on that about how she's back working for them again and she's older than she ever has been. But you know what? Beauty, in my opinion, we've come a long way about what we think is beautiful. And I think it's a much healthier view of that. Because for one thing, we see lots more people now. And lots of different people are beautiful. I was at my hair salon, as an aside, and beautiful Abby was helping me cut my hair. And this young man was delivering some stuff to the salon. And he has the most beautiful hair. He's African-American. Uh-huh. And it's a good weave. And it's a hard one to do. And it's like perfection. And it goes down his back. I said, that man has the most beautiful hair. And she goes, doesn't he though? I said, yes, he does.
He probably has great patience.
Well, and he goes somewhere and gets it done because that's hard to do.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Impressive. That takes hours and hours and hours to perfect even something to like there. That. Yes.
No, my hair is very short, so it does not take hours and hours. Okay, so vegetables you can grow in pots. We thought we'd talk about this because, well, it comes up every year. People want to know.
Yeah, and so the good news is that the breeders have been working on new, smaller versions of or varieties of vegetables that grow well in containers for years, and then you put in the bad news.
Yeah, well, the bad news is you just have to be realistic about what your harvests are going to be from these miniature plants. Some, you get quite a bit of harvest. No, that's not true. Most of the smaller plants that are bred by hybridizers, you do not get a big harvest. I mean, if hybridizers want to send Carol and me some plants that give big harvests, I'll take them, but I've not really seen it.
The one plant that you could put in a container and probably get enough is cherry tomatoes.
Yes, and they're not bred specifically. There are cherry tomatoes that are heart-shaped and different things that are, kitschy is the wrong word. They're kind of showstopper plants, but we're talking about real cherry tomatoes, which are usually indeterminate, frankly, and they grow quite tall, but you can just kind of hang them up in a cage or you can stake them or whatever, and they will just produce and produce and produce forever. And yours truly is growing the sweetest cherry tomato I can possibly grow this year. And Carol went around and helped me find all the cherry tomatoes.
That's
right. I've got them all started. They're all small plants, and before long, they'll be big plants in my containers. So you were talking about two that Burpee sent you this spring.
Yeah. So earlier this spring, Burpee sent me a package of seeds. They sent two containers. They're like 6-inch containers. They're plastic with a plastic tray. They sent me a bag of potting soil and then seeds for cucumber quick snack, which is one of their kitchen minis. Mm-hmm. I thought, okay, I am going to grow it in the pot you sent with the soil you sent, and I'm going to see if I can get cucumber out of that.
And that'll be interesting. How big is that pot?
6-inch pot. It's no bigger than 6 inches.
Okay. Well, you aren't going to get much of a harvest, as we know, because they need a lot of root space, even the small ones, I would think, to get, because they really, they use a lot of energy.
I will see. They also sent seeds for the label says basil bonsai. And so when I tried to find those seeds, I can't find seeds. There's all kinds of posts out there about people making bonsai out of basil, which I don't know. We'll see.
Well, you just keep trimming it up. So it's interesting you bring that up. I saw at, where was I? I was at, Ace Hardware, of all places, on Danforth in Edmond. And I ran around back to where the vegetables were because I wanted to see if they had any eggplants that I wanted other than the ones I've started. And they did. They had Fairy Tale, which is one of my favorite ones. But then they also had boxwood basil. Now, what's interesting about that is it's the same principle as the bonsai basil. It's a little tight basil, and you can turn it into a topiary. I saw this basil when I was in California Spring Trials in 2015, and it has finally made its way to Oklahoma in at least one store in these certain pots, which I think are part of the Chef's Jeff's. Do you guys have Chef's Jeff vegetables where you live?
They do up at the place called Damon's. They have those.
So I suspect boxwood is very similar to your bonsai.
I suspect so. So I'm going to grow that again. They sent me the pot and everything. So I'm going to grow those in the pots. It will be a lovely experiment. We'll see how that works out.
It'll be cute.
If you're going to go shopping for plants, vegetable plants for containers, look for something that says patio variety or good for containers, because they're starting to label these things pretty often.
They need to, because it's confusing, I think, to people. So, and I grow all my tomatoes in pots. I grow the determinate ones, the indeterminate ones. I've recently switched to the Vigo pots from the Smart Pots. I wanted a neater look. And anyway, the thing about gardening in pots that I wanted to add is you will need to water daily. You need to keep them in full sun, and you need a fertilizer, but I fertilize them. I actually think you added this, but then I was also thinking about the fact that it's good to have them on drip irrigation in Oklahoma, or I love that watering wand by Dram. That thing will water a pot very fast. So if you only have a few pots, you could do that. But if you're doing your whole vegetable garden in pots, my suggestion in Oklahoma is group them for watering and then put them on drip.
And I have a funny story about vegetables growing in pots. And I might have told this before, and I've used it in talks. And I'll tell you, we were in Buffalo, and I think we were there. This was when we were there for the Fling, I think, versus Garden Comp. Doesn't matter. So go to the back, and the guy's got, he's used those great big plastic storage totes for his vegetable garden.
Yeah.
And the thing was, it looked to me like he had cut the lid, a big hole in the lid to put on it. And then I just looked at it and I thought, why don't you just take the lid off? You could use it as a drip tray underneath. And I'm like, this is a man's garden who thinks about, I could take the lid off. No, instead they cut a great big hole in the lid to plant. And I'm like, why'd you do that?
I think he was trying to keep the weeds down, but what he doesn't know is that you don't get that many weeds in container gardens anyway.
I just laugh and laugh and laugh. And I have that picture somewhere, and I've used it in a talk, and
it's a good one.
I make fun.
Okay. And you can also, if you want to do containers, I've seen people take bags of potting soil. They lay them on their backs, split them down the middle, and plant directly in those. And that works for stuff that isn't super duper deep rooted. It might not work for a tomato because a tomato is really deep rooted, but for peppers, onions, lettuce.
I've seen it done with tomatoes.
I'm sure you can, especially determinate, because it would split out the roots and they would go to the side. But here's my thing on that. The plastic is degrading into the soil. I don't know if that matters. And frankly, I don't care. The people who have those gardens, they don't care either. And that's just another way to do it. I also have a client who has those great big feed tubs that she gets cattle feed in, and she uses those as planters.
Yes, that's very popular, to go down to the Tractor Supply and get those great big cattle feed things. They're big, though. Yep.
They're not big, very pretty. Man, they're really big. So,
but you know, when you have a whole garden of them, because up at the greenhouse, before they remodeled and did a bunch of stuff, they had a vegetable garden that was all in those cattle troughs. And it was actually quite pretty. And they had probably, I don't know, a dozen of them. But they have since remodeled and done a bunch of stuff. So they're kind of sitting to the side of a greenhouse. But it was very effective.
I bet it was. And I love, you know, I love the look of a good metal container, like if one of those type of troughs, the watering troughs. I think that's beautiful. In fact, I use one of your pictures from a garden in Indiana in one of my talks on containers.
And I bet I know exactly what garden it is. It's tucked up in downtown Indianapolis, and it's kind of behind a, he kind of tucked it in behind the garage, and it was cute because he also had this little garden cabinet, I should say. And for the tour, he had a bottle of whiskey set in there for whatever reason. But that was also very lovely.
That's fun.
That guy's a landscape architect who did that.
You can totally tell because that garden is professional looking. Yeah. It is very, very pretty. Yeah. And one of the smartest things he did is he chose all the same container. If you choose all the same container, it looks much more put together than if you do a hodgepodge. Okay, that's all our gardening tips for today.
All right. Well, I'm going to do a quote and we're going to go into the bookshelf. I think books are like people in the sense that they'll turn up in your life when you most need them. And that is Emma Thompson.
Another one we love. Another woman of our age who we love.
She's older than us, isn't she?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Not a lot, though. Okay. So the name of our book this week is A Year Full of Pots, Container Flowers for All Seasons by Sarah Raven. And it is lavishly photographed, lavishly is my word, by Jonathan Buckley. And this is one I asked for. And actually, it was offered to me. And I said, yes, please, because I am a huge fan of Sarah Raven. I think her work with color is better than almost anybody.
And we've talked about that. I sent you the hard copy of her book.
Yeah, The Bold and Brilliant Garden, which is, I don't know if it's even in print anymore. So here's the deal. I'm going to say a little bit about her because Carol told me to. She is an author, broadcaster, and much loved gardening expert. And she started her gardening career as a florist and a cut flower farmer. Then she began a seed catalog. And now Sarah Raven is a brand name in Great Britain. And it's pretty impressive. She was a doctor before she had her first child, which I think is also interesting. She is married to Adam Nicholson, and he is the grandson of Vida Sackville-West and Harold Nicholson, and they own Perch Hill in Sussex, and they're involved with Sissinghurst Castle, which is owned by the National Trust. I've been to Sissinghurst Castle, and it is a wonderful place to go. I also know that she does a lot of work out at her own personal garden and lets people come and visit. And then this book was photographed, I think, totally in her garden. And I'm thinking something, I need to look at something real quick because I don't think it's Perch Hill. I think it's Perth Hill. And I think autocorrect needed to change it for me, which really, really irritates me. So
it's Perch. No, you had it right.
Nope, it's Perch. Good. I had it right. I just wanted to make sure because I've never been there and I didn't want to say it wrong. Okay, so I actually wrote this stuff down for a change. Carol, are you impressed?
I'm very impressed.
So here are a few things to note. Not everything grown in pots in Great Britain or anything in Great Britain, not everything anyway, doesn't matter whether you grow it in ground or in pots, will work in my part of the U.S. or Carol's part of the U.S. There's always an issue with Great Britain and gardening books from there, but you can still get inspiration from their work.
You can.
Because I think British gardeners are often way ahead of us and thinking about different ways to do things. And Sarah is a colorist, and so she just does amazing things, which I'll talk about in a minute. Also, if you want to use pots in an Oklahoma garden, for example, you can't plant tender things that need a lot of water in terracotta. You will notice in this book that Sarah has a lot of things in terracotta. It is the classic, classic container. But if you want to use them here, you need to stick with succulents or pelargoniums, which are our tropical geraniums. They do well in those kind of pots. Citrus trees do too. I know this because I've done it. And then You can also do bulbs in them, but that's another whole complication.
Bulbs are complicated in pots.
They're extremely complicated in pots. I've done it and I've been really successful at it. And I've also done it and had failures. So it all depends on what kind of winter we have. So although I think it's charming that she shows pots throughout her Perch Hill garden, to do that here, you need to have drip irrigation that is plugged into your gardens. And so you're going to have to decide, I want that pot there next year too, or you will have to tap off that hole. That's something to keep in mind, right?
And that's one of those things that in her book and other books, they talk about using a pot to fill a spot in the garden. But here as well, you must think about how is that going to get watered? And if every day you have to drag a hose out there, like I don't have drip irrigation, if you have to drag a hose out there every day, it is not going to happen.
No, and I can't tell you how many clients I have to say that to because they're just sure that they will water it. I want you to remember that Sarah has a full staff.
Yes, she has people.
She has people to do it for her. And she has so many pots because this book is arranged month by month. And I loved it. I mean, I loved looking at it and I can't wait to go back and read it some more because she has beautiful combinations. But she has pots that have bulbs in them that she's done in the fall that she later replaces with her hot stuff. But to do that, you're going to have different pots, which I don't think people here understand. So she has her bulb pots and she has her tropical pots. And Monty Don does the same thing on Gardener's World.
Well, and I have my one violas. They're in these shallow bowls on the front steps. When those violas are done, I don't mess with those bowls in the summertime because they're too shallow and they dry out too quick. And in fact, the other day when it was 83 degrees here, one of them was like, Carol, if we don't get water, we are done. And I quickly watered it and everything. But so those go into the garage and they don't come out again until next spring.
Right. For me, they would come out again in fall if I was going to plant violas in them again. Okay. So those are my caveats, but I want to say a couple of things that I really love. So I love instead of saying thriller, filler, spiller, which is what is said about pots in the United States, all based on a Fine Gardening article. And I can't remember the man's name right now, but I've referred to him many times. And thank goodness he came up with that deal because it does help you give someone an idea of what to do. In hers, she talks about the plants in one pot as bride, bridesmaid, and gatecrasher. And gatecrasher is the bright contrasting color. I thought that was very clever and very British. And then the color palettes. Okay, so then each section is arranged, not only are they arranged monthly, but they're also arranged by color palettes. And so the color palettes are dark and rich, boiled, sweet, brilliant. And I had to think about that for a minute. And then I thought, oh yeah, hard candy. So boiled sweet in Great Britain is hard candies.
Right.
And then soft and warm and soft and cool. And so if you bought this book, you could look through it and figure out what tulips you want to plant this fall, which I've already bought have I bought my tulips, Carol? I think I did.
You have made claim that you have bought all your bulbs for fall. And then you
lied.
Every episode come up with something else you need to buy, as I suspected would happen.
Okay. Well, yeah, I don't give you a hard time about all the violas that you put on Garden Bloggers Bloom Day. I've definitely not bought all the bulbs I was going to buy, but I think I've bought all the tulips I need. So probably not going to buy any, but I'm going to look at them anyway. There's a couple of colors that are amazing. I want people to know that in the US, sometimes these bulbs are named differently.
Yes.
That's true of roses too. European roses and American roses. I don't know why, but sometimes they put a really dumb name on it for the Americans. I find that offensive, by the way, rose namers. And then they put something really good on it for Europe. Okay, so this is another thing. Nobody does color like Sarah.
Nobody does.
Nobody. Christopher, can't think of his last name right now, who had Great Dixter.
Christopher Lloyd.
Lloyd. Christopher Lloyd, he wrote the forward to her first book, and he was known as the color guy at the time. He's since passed away, but she does it a lot like Christopher Lloyd. Really beautiful color combos. again, bulbs and pots, which she spends about the first third of the book on, very hard to do in my climate and in Carol's climate, because my climate can be really cold and, you know, and then it can be really hot. It's just complicated. And if you don't put a screen over them, then the squirrels get into them. So it's just complicated. I also like her writing style. And I really enjoyed that podcast I listened to because it isn't fussy. She's very matter of fact. She has a little section called the practical section, and it gives great information for creating the style she is known for. And I just read the one about how to start seeds, and I thought it was really well written. And one of the things she talked about was really good. Oh, she was talking about growing zinnias from seed indoors. So she starts hers indoors because, of course, she's a floral farmer and a florist. She says they don't like
her indoors, by the way, is her greenhouse.
Yeah, she has a big greenhouse, a huge greenhouse. Mine's very small, but I still start some things indoors. Anyway, she puts them in pellets. This is a good piece of advice because they don't like their roots disturbed. So they literally take those pellets and just stick them right in the ground. Same thing with sunflowers. In Great Britain, you have to start sunflowers indoors. Their season sometimes isn't long enough. So loved this book. Loved it. Can't wait to tell the publicist because she'll be happy to.
And here's the other thing. So I got this book and I love it too. I mean, you could spend hours looking through this, and she's got some good advice, and you just have to do that little interpretation of like, okay, how about in my garden?
Yeah. Well, this
how
work
would that
here?
Work? Yeah. And, but you're right. The color combinations and stuff are just stunning. So she has, when I got this, she has, so this is divided out by months. And so like she has violas in May in this book.
Right.
Where here it's like, well, that's kind of April here.
Yeah, it is at my house.
Kind of surprising because it gets too hot too fast.
Right here too.
So this is a year full of pots. So she has two other year full of, a year full of flowers and a year full of veggies. And you know how I was working to winnow down my book collection. And I keep having this fear that I sold off one of her books, like a year full of flowers. And I can't imagine, though, that I did. So I must be thinking that I really want those two books. So I might have to get them. And D, I figured out how to get them for free. We could talk about that.
Oh, it's going to be gardener math. Yay.
So no, this is book math. But anyway.
Book math. Okay. Page 241 is pelargoniums. And I want to say that pelargoniums are in July in here. My pelargoniums are done blooming in July and will not bloom again until fall, even if I feed them. So my pelargoniums bloom about May through June, depending on the variety. But I love that she has these sections on flowers that are kind of, you know, people don't talk much about pelargoniums now, and they don't talk much about violas except for as a, like a, I don't know, a staging plant between seasons, you know?
Yeah.
And the truth is, these plants were much beloved by our grandmothers, and Carol and I are doing our best to bring them back.
We are, and we're going to talk about pelargoniums in my rabbit hole in a little bit. But so I have points built up on a credit card.
Yeah.
And if I use that card to buy these books, I can actually use the points to buy them, and that makes them free.
That's book math. I like it.
It's book math. Anyway, that is A Year Full of Pots, Container Flowers for All Seasons by Sarah Raven. We apologize in advance to our listeners. We have presented two books. And that's so right. Here's always the recommendation. Ask your library if they have copies. Look them over in person to decide if they're for you, and then you'll get them. Next.
So we need to do a quote. Is it my turn?
Yeah. It is your turn.
I went out on an April morning all alone, for my heart was high. I was a child of the shining meadow. I was a sister of the sky. There in the wind flood of the morning, longing lifted its weight from me, lost as a sob in the midst of cheering, swept as a seabird out to sea. That's Sarah Teasdale. And it's a portion of a poem that she did. And I don't have the name of the poem, but I loved it. I thought it was beautiful.
So our dirt, you found our dirt. So you can talk about it.
I didn't find our dirt. My priest, Father Novak, found our dirt, and he found this Instagrammer, which we're going to link to him, who makes vases out of invasive tree wood. And he sent it to me because I hate Bradford pears, as does almost everyone who is a long-term gardener. Right. And he made a beautiful vase out of a Bradford pear, but that is the funniest video. So we should just link to it because it's hysterical. And the him going up to those trees and talking about how stinky they are and stuff.
Just they're horrible laugh. Stinky.
They do. To me, they smell like cat urine. So he's also made a map of the United States made from wood from state trees. But Carol and I want to point out that sometimes he doesn't really pick your state tree. Because for you, he picked some...
He picked the sycamore, which is a tree that grows natively here. And actually, one of our colleges, Indiana State, their mascot is the sycamores.
And here, what is your actual tree? Your state
tree? The tulip
tree. Okay. And so in my case, our state tree, I'm going to say national tree, our state tree is the redbud, the Oklahoma redbud. I just did a big video on it on Instagram. And he chose for us the Bodark tree, which is the Osage orange. I don't know why he picked the Osage orange. I'm sure if I go listen to that particular video when I get a chance, I'll understand why, but it still is a cool map.
It is a very cool map. I should check. My brother-in-law does all kinds of wood turning and stuff. I should send that to him and suggest that for each of us, he should make a map of the United States.
He should.
All right. So that's good dirt. Now I'll do a quote and go to the rabbit holes. Little things seem nothing, but they give peace, like those meadow flowers, which individually seem odorless, but altogether perfume the air. Georges Bernanos.
I imagine his name is really Jorge. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yes. And it might be Bernanos, but we don't know because it doesn't have the little tilde above it. So we're sorry, Georges. We really are.
Or okay, Jorge.
Yeah, I have a long story about that because I used to do documents for when I was a legal assistant, and we had clients that were named Jorge. Okay, so rabbit holes, you go first because I jabbered a lot.
All right, you're going to have to buckle up, okay?
Wow, I'm buckling in and buckling up. There's a lot here.
So it all makes sense if you just listen carefully. So
I am.
Remember, 2 weeks ago, my Lost Lady of Garden Writing was Viola Brainerd Baird, who'd written Wild Violets of North America. So I was finishing up the research on her, and I found this article written in the Charlotte Observer by a woman named Mrs. L.L. Huffman. I always thought Elizabeth Lawrence was their only garden writer. Anyway, so this was in 1952 article. So I put Mrs. L.L. Huffman on my list of Lost Ladies of Garden Writing. And then over to the side, there was an ad for gardening books. And you and I talked a little bit about this last week, and I kept thinking, did we talk after we recorded or before while we were recording?
It was while.
Anyway, so we talked about that book. I flipped over the back of it, and there is a list of books by Elizabeth Goudge, G-O-U-D-G-E, which you said you have heard of her.
Mm-hmm.
I had never heard of her. And so I started looking up information and I saw that she wrote a children's book called The Little White Horse that J.K. Rowling said was one of her favorite books as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And she said it was one that had direct influence on Harry Potter because Elizabeth Goudge went to great details to describe the food they ate in The Little White Horse. And J.K. Rowling did the same thing. She also described a lot of the food that they ate in the Harry Potter books.
Oh, so yeah. Anyway,
I checked out of the library and I read it and I thought, I really like this. And so I hadn't done any more research on her, but someone commented on my blog that I thought, who is this? And they had a Substack for their garden stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I clicked on that. And then at the end, recommended the Elizabeth Goudge Book Club Substack. And I thought, what? And so, of course, I went out there and subscribed to that. And it turns out that this person who has this garden thing, and she's anyway, she runs this Elizabeth Goji book club. And so I'm in now. I'm in the Elizabeth
Goji. You ordered three of her books to read.
I did. They were
you
free.
You didn't say that yet.
They were free because of book math, but they should be arriving today. But yes, I looked at used copies and Elizabeth Goji, and according, and I did some Instagramming messaging with this person who runs the book club. Her name is Julie Whitmer. And she said that Elizabeth Goji was very popular. She was born in 1900. Most of her books were written in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, I guess. She was very popular until about 1970. And then she died in, I think, 1984. And then was mostly forgotten until the early 2000s. And now suddenly people are finding her again.
That's cool.
So it is cool. But here's the so her life story is kind of interesting. All of her books, I will say, they all have good morals. Her father was a rector or vicar or something. They all have Christian principles around them. And I wanted to tell you that in The Little White Horse, just to pique your interest, pink geraniums have a part in the story.
You said there were salmon pink. Woohoo!
Salmon pink geraniums are part of the story.
Nice. Nice. I like it.
So in case you've never read that and want to get it out of your library and read it.
I've never read it. No. I just don't know when I'm going to find the time. I've got so much stuff to read. You know, if you and I didn't do a book a week or two books, it would help.
Well, but anyway. So that was my rabbit hole. So now I'm kind of in the Elizabeth Goji book club, reading more of her books. And I found another person who writes about gardening on Substack. And anyway, it's just, you're just laughing. It's just, that's just how it goes sometimes. But it's a very.
Like ordering bulbs. It's how it goes sometimes.
Yes.
You think you're done and then you're not. Okay.
But we laugh. The reason we laugh about the book math, because I did write a blog post about my gardener math to describe how I got free plants at the hardware store. So I'll just link to that. People have probably already read it if they follow my blog. But anyway, if you use your credit card points to buy the books, that essentially makes the books free.
In my book, yeah. Okay, so my rabbit hole. I have been deep in salvia research for several clients because you can't beat salvia for great swimmer color, but I'm prejudiced against East Friesland and May Night in our climate. And there's a couple of reasons why. I hate the foliage. I hate it. And I hate how it dies out in the middle. Uh-huh. And then I just hate them. I hate those plants. And so people always have them in their gardens because they sell them. And there's also a newer one that they sell at Lowe's every stinking year. And I'm like, I wish they would stop selling them quite so much. Not that they don't deserve their place in the back of the garden way where nobody can see that ugly foliage, but it is what it is. So instead, I like the Salvia farinacea class. That's my favorite one. That's one of my biggest tips when I garden coach people. And it's because the foliage, they're upright instead of falling over like the other salvias do, because everybody puts them in too good a soil and salvias really don't want good soil. So they grow upright and they have beautiful blue green foliage, and it's stately, not scraggly. And then I'm especially excited this year. So there's a bunch of different Salvia farinaceas. There's Victoria Blue, which is the standard one.
Yes. But
lately they have been, hybridizers have been doing an interspecific group, which I didn't look it up, but I'm going to just guess it's Longa spicata. Did I say that right? Longa spicata. And it's farinacea times that. And I may not have gotten that Latin name right because I didn't write it down. But the point is, those, because they have the L part, they grow even taller and more stately while still retaining the blue-green foliage. The bad news is, in Oklahoma, those are grown as annuals.
I was going to say they're grown as annuals in Indiana, most definitely.
But they are worth it to be in your garden because they're so good looking. And like I put the ones that are really tall around my fountain, my red fountain. There's a couple of proven winners ones you can also find the one I'm really excited about this year is the Cathedral series. And I have the dark blue, Cathedral dark blue. I found it at Under the Sun the other day, and I planted it in my pots. And it also comes in white and light blue. And my daughter was with me, Megan, and she and I picked up the white ones first because I thought, oh, that'll be different for the pots. And she goes, what are you doing? I said, picking up this salvia. And she goes, that salvia is not as pretty as that dark blue one. And I went, you're right. So I put the white one back and got the dark blue one. So, you know, they're gorgeous. They do well in pots. They do well in your borders. They look really good with pink things like pink petunias. But I had two clients this week that I was trying to find them varieties. So I've really been in that rabbit hole for days and days.
Yeah, I was going to say, now May Nights is a perennial salvia. You can stick it in your perennial border.
I hate that one.
I have that one.
So is East Friesland. They're both terrible. I would rather you get, if you're going to get that one, get the Proven Winners. I'll look it up. Winners Salvia. It's one of the... It's not part of the Rockin' the Blues is Rockin' Playin' the Blues is Salvia longa spicata. I was really close, times Farinacea. But they also have another one that is the perennial one. And I actually have it down in my garden.
And you know
and
what?
I've got really well here.
I've got a perennial salvia that I'll have to go back and look at my notes to see who sent it. But it's out here by the bird feeder. So it's, you know, there's crap being dropped on it all the time. And it has come back and I'm just going to peek out the window there.
Okay. So while you're doing that, the one I'm talking about is one called Blue Bayou Meadow Sage, which is a Salvia nemorosa. And of the perennial salvias, I like the Salvia nemorosas because again, they hold their foliage up. But there's another one that is... There's another one that's part of the Blues series too. So you look at yours.
Well, I just looked out there and it's already blooming, which is, it's kind of early.
Yeah, mine's blooming too. It's a little early. So I'm not seeing mine in this. Oh, here's, no, that's not it either. So they have a lot of the Rocking the Blues series and some of it's perennial and some of it isn't perennial. And remember when we had pink profusion and we loved it, but it would bloom itself to death? That's another one. So
yeah.
I could go out and look at mine, but I don't think it matters that much. It's just a, you know.
And dear listeners, you have just, we have gone way deeper in the rabbit hole than
Dee went
because that's the way it goes. Let's talk about our garden commissions.
I'm going to cut the boxwood back. And the last lavender, and I'm also going to mulch my cut flower bed. That's my big goals. What about you?
My goal is to keep on weeding. There's some areas that I've just really got to get rid of this dead nettle. I got to plant out the onions I grew from seed. They're out there hardening off, which basically I stuck them out and they've been out there ever since. And then I definitely
understand that method.
Yeah. Good luck to you. No. And then the winter sown seedlings, I mean, I have got to do something with those in the next few days. I just flat ran out of time this week. I don't know where the time goes, but definitely it's the last week of April coming up. So I got to get it taken care of.
Yeah.
So that is it for this week's episode. We want to thank you for listening to The Garden Analyst, Angelus. I hope you've hit that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode. We publish every week on Wednesdays at 12 a.m. Eastern Time.
If you listen to Apple Podcasts, we'd love a 5-star review. That helps us get noticed by others. Could you also share our podcast with your friends? Word of mouth is still the best way to get the word out there.
And be sure and check out our show notes for links for more information about today's topics, plus links to our own websites.
And subscribe to our Substack newsletter, The Garden Angelus at Substack.com. It's also linked to in our show notes. If you do, you get a link to listen to the podcast a day early.
And if you want to help support us, use those affiliate links. If you buy something after clicking through on them, we earn a small commission and it costs you nothing.
Or you can set up a monthly subscription through Buzzsprout, or you can make a one-time donation through PayPal.
Thank you to everyone who has done so. It helps us pay for the podcast hosting.
It was lovely to chat with all of you over the garden gate. Bye until next week.
Bye, everybody.